What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Going Deep podcast with Aaron Watson. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you for continuing to listen if you are already a subscriber. If you are not and you like today's episode, I encourage you to subscribe to the show. Also, if you could leave a rating and review, you have no idea how much that would help me out. Today's guest is Victor Jimenez. Victor is an entrepreneur. He has a whole business platform built around his cycling expertise. He has a podcast, an online course. He owned a bicycle shop for a while and taught classes as well, and is now transitioning into business mentorship. But in today's episode, we have a nice discussion about how he kind of got pushed into entrepreneurship, the lessons that he learned along the way, along with some of his failures, and kind of having to dig himself out of a hole, and the challenge that he'd like to issue to the audience is pretty cool. So I encourage you to listen to the whole thing. The challenge is at the end, and I hope you enjoy the episode. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Victor Jimenez. So, Victor, thank you so much for coming on my podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for inviting me. This is awesome.
You have really been a lifelong entrepreneur. I was looking at your bio before I interviewed you, and you actually attribute it partially to some struggles you had in school. School wasn't really, didn't feel like it was doing the job for you. So can you take us back to that experience and what that was like, and maybe how that kind of propelled you into your entrepreneurial journey?
So when I was in school, really young age, I acted up in class. You know, I was 8 years old, and I couldn't read. And school was just, to me, it just seemed like a waste. And it was really, really a tremendous struggle. I mean, it was awful for me. I thought I was stupid. I thought I was weird. I'm like, why? I'm sure lots of other people go through this. And my mother really looked out for me. Well, she didn't take notice early on, but then she realized that, oh my God, I was faking it. I couldn't read. This kid can't read. He's 8 years old. And she got me into a special program. And what happened there was all they did was they started teaching in a way that combined the things that I was interested in. And so as a kid, I was really interested in usual kid stuff, ride bikes, and I was a sailor, a competitive sailor. And so all of my lessons then became focused around those interests. So we would talk about history, and the teacher would connect it back to sailing, or we'd talk about geometry or whatever it was and connected it. And so once I got into that, then I realized that, oh my gosh, I'm not stupid. It was just a different way of learning. So anyway, I really, really struggled in school with that. And it, even up and through high school, even though I had gone into a special school and I got into special programs, I still struggled a little bit, because whenever I got put into the normal classroom context, it just didn't click for me. It seemed like, you know, all they wanted us to do is memorize a bunch of stuff, and just, I don't know, it's a little bit of a rebel. I was like, this is ridiculous. Why do I need to remember that? Fast forward, going into adult life, I became a voracious learner. I mean, once I graduated high school, I actually did go to college for a couple of years, and the same thing happened there. It was just, I just thought the whole thing was a sham. So I just decided, you know what, I'm going to go and take all the courses that I'm interested in. I don't really care about any degree. And so I was taking courses on business and accounting, and just really things that I liked and that I was passionate about. Because I knew I was always interested in business, even from when I was very, very young, you know, selling catfish. You know, we lived on a little lake. We used to catch a lot of catfish, and I was probably, I don't know, 6 or 7 years old, and we would take these big catfish and go door to door and sell catfish to the neighbors, and which was hilarious. Now, looking back on it, it was serious business back then, but, you know, looking back on it, it was, it was pretty funny. So, anyway, throughout my youth, I always was kind of creative and coming up with some sort of way to make a couple extra bucks and have fun.
Yeah, I have a lot of similar experiences myself. I had the stereotypical set up the lemonade stand in the front yard. Mm-hmm. Also had a business where I was selling pictures that I had drawn. I think I was really little, but I'd set up a table and I drew pictures, almost like selling art that I had made.
Nice.
And one of the really good lessons that I learned from that was when you set up the table there, you see a lot of cars drive right by you, and you see a lot of people. You're not the center of the universe. People are on their own path, doing their own thing. You have to go to them in a lot of cases if you want to get something done or get something sold. And there's definitely, you know, those little nuggets that, you know, maybe seem very obvious or are really the fundamentals that you build your continued business acumen upon. I have another buddy who started his own landscaping business, and it started with him, you know, mowing the neighbor's lawn and then mowing mm-hmm. six lawns. And now he's doing, you know, putting up retaining walls and adding a larger repertoire of services that he offers. And I think that that's in anything that you're doing, whether it's business, whether it's any skill you're trying to build, there's fundamentals that you start out with, and a slow, continuous build will get you where you eventually want to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things like the catfish story, you know, selling catfish door to door and lemonade stands and, you know, all kinds of stuff like that, is you learn to build a connection. And like those cars driving by, you know, they all don't want to look at you because they know as soon as they look at some kid selling lemonade, that they're like, they have to stop. There's an emotional connection and they'll stop and buy something. And so we actually had, okay, success with catfish. I mean, who's going to deny some cute little kids coming up to the door with catfish and like, hey, you want to buy some catfish? We'll clean it for you and everything. It's pretty funny. But now I carry that a lot of those early lessons. I can see a little bit clearer now how they place and they shape things. You know, like for instance, not being able to read, and because I didn't do that, I couldn't read. I learned to be creative in things that I did. It's like I was super creative and I faked reading, which takes a lot of effort, probably a lot more effort than actually reading, right?
Absolutely.
So it's just interesting to see how all those things connect.
Absolutely. So now you are a little bit higher level businessman. I think that's fair to say, doing more than selling catfish door to door. You've got your own podcast with millions of downloads. You have a online virtual course that teaches people technique when it comes to technical cycling. You also do some in-person coaching. I'm sure I'm making a very brief summarization of all that you do, but you've really gone all out with following this passion for cycling and turning it into, I don't know if you call it a business. Do you call it multiple businesses? Do you see it as one big platform? How do you envision what you do now?
I think you summarized it pretty well. So basically, I have several cycling related areas, and I kind of view them sort of as one thing, even though they're different platforms. And then I also have more recently got into business mentoring and business coaching. So I see, you know, what I've done my whole life, I've had multiple businesses over the years, and I've really just gone for what I'm interested in. You know, it's like, oh, I'm interested in cycling. Before I had any cycling business, this is years and years and years ago, one of the things, I was a fitness, really into health and fitness. I'd gone to school and I'd taken a lot of courses on exercise physiology and things like that. And I decided that I wanted to be a personal trainer. I lived in South Florida. I decided, well, okay, well, I can make a lot of money if I go and become a personal trainer for like these really wealthy, not celebrities, but very wealthy people that live in South Florida. And this business didn't last long because I quickly realized, at least where I was and the clients that I was attracting were, there were people that I didn't connect with. Even though I liked the health and fitness aspect of it, most of them really wanted a personal trainer to say they had a personal trainer. It was more of a status symbol? Yeah, more of a status symbol. And they wouldn't want to do the work. And after a very short period of time, I don't know, maybe 6 months of doing that, I said, well, I can't do this. These people they're not interested. I thought people were going to be interested in fitness like me, and I was going to inspire them. So I basically dissolved that business, and I was searching around, and I'm like, okay, well, I'm really interested in cycling. I really want to do something in cycling. And because I was a bike racer, raced all over the place, and I thought I knew the cycling business, but all I really knew was how to ride a bike, you know, basically. And I searched, and I bought an existing retail bicycle store. I basically dove 100% all in. I didn't have any money. I think I bought it it was nothing. Basically a few thousand dollars, you know. Gave them a little bit of money, what I had. They liked me, and they said, here you go. And I really didn't, they didn't have any much inventory. All they had was an existing rent, you know, a building that I could rent, and they had some sort of built-in clientele. And I had no idea how to run a retail business at that time. I talked to an accountant, I talked to lawyers, I talked to family members that are business people, and every single one of them said, no, this is really not a good move. You need to go back to school or something. This is not a good move for you. And I still stuck with that. You know, I'm like, no, it feels right. I want to do this. And I know cycling. I know the people that cycle. You know, if it's okay, I'd like to tell you a little bit more about this because I think
absolutely.
It'll connect with people. I had this retail business. It was just me when I started, and I had no idea what I was doing. Very, very quickly, I just from hard work, I reached out to people, the cycling community. I started group rides. I started a cycling club. I did all these things. And very, very quickly, this business that was doing hardly anything, it grew really quickly, which seems like a really good thing. But when you don't know what you're doing and you don't have any systems in place, it was actually a really bad thing. 2 years, you know, so sales were good. I was taking home just the minimal amount that I could, and every cent I made in the business, I just plowed it back in because I didn't have money to invest in it really. And I just kind of bootstrapped and just plowed every cent I made into the business, and I lived like on nothing. You know, I lived in a teeny little cottage, had no money. You know, it was just basically my life was the business. And 2 years or so, I'm not sure if it was exactly 2 years, but a few years into it, the business had grown tremendously. I had employees. I had a lot of inventory. I had expanded the business into a much larger location. And I thought things were going well. And then I stood back and I realized, like, oh my God, I have a mountain of debt. I can barely pay my employees. Sales were coming in. Business was good. And I couldn't stand them, my customers. I couldn't stand them. You know, that it was just, you know, there was a lot of people that were just, they would have these department store bikes and they want us to fix them. And it was just not the kind of bike stuff that I had envisioned that I liked. I was a bike racer. I was into racing and triathlons and things like that. And I wasn't into this kind of cheap, junky bike. And we're on the edge of going out of business. I had to do something, and I was desperate, and I talked to a lot of people, and my advisors, this is hilarious, is most of my advisors that I was getting for this business were the sales reps from the companies that sold me my inventory. And, you know, they had their interest in mind, advising me, well, you should sell these bikes because these other stores are selling these and they're doing really well, and you display it in this way. And I said, okay, well, sure, I'll do that. And that's how I got this mountain of debt, because I'm listening to them and they're saying, yeah, you need to carry more. Oh, don't worry about it. We'll give you credit and you can just pay for it later. So here I am. I'm like, now I have a lot more responsibility. I have these employees. I have all this debt that I owe my vendors, and I couldn't pay it. So I took a step back and thought, well, what can I do? And on top of all this is I couldn't stand a lot of my customers. It just wasn't, they weren't the people that I really wanted to deal with. So I thought, well, why did I get into this in the first place? Because I like cycling. And why, I like the people in the cycling world and that are into, not necessarily competitive, but they're doing it as a sport, as a fitness thing, not just having kids bikes. Not that there's anything wrong with it. It just wasn't my thing. So I was trying to be everything to everybody with our inventory and our customers. We had racing bikes for $3,000 or $4,000. We had little kids bikes for $99. We'd work on any kind of bike. So what we did is, I look back and I said, these are the things that I like, and these are the kinds of people that I wanted to have as customers. And we shifted our focus on our inventory and the way we communicated and to the people that we wanted to do business with. We eliminated a huge amount of types of products that were broad, and we focused on just a few products that we knew well, that we liked, that connected to who our customers were. As soon as we did that, we went from nearly going out of business to in probably 12 months, maybe less than 12 months, to being at the top of the industry for the size of our store, where we were making more money than most people in the industry. It was pure luck. I didn't have any advisors really tell me. They were telling me the wrong thing. I did the opposite of what they said. And it was really sort of intuition, like, I don't want to do business with these people. I want to do business with these other people. When we started all our communication, we started going out there and doing clinics for people, for our audience. And that's what made the difference for us. And it made it a lot more pleasurable every day.
With that experience that you had, kind of having the wrong mentors or mentors mm-hmm. that weren't giving you the best advice, how did that affect your selection of future mentors? So did you make a concerted effort and target, say, I want him or her to be my mentor because they really seem to know what they're talking about? Did you push the idea of mentors to the wayside and just focus on reading and other resources to be your guide? How did that affect your relationship with mentors?
I really struggled trying to find a mentor. I had a few people that I respected in their business, but to be quite honest, I really couldn't find anybody that I connected with. I definitely had quite a few people giving me advice, but I didn't really connect with them. And so I used a lot of books, even though I couldn't read at a young age. As an adult, I'm just a voracious reader. Read quite a bit. Believe it or not, that a lot of things that really helped me and still continue to, or were sort of diving into meditation and things like that. And those seem to help me get a grasp on what it is that I really am after and what I really want in my life. And
any books in particular that you care to mention?
Sure. I'm a huge fan of Joseph Campbell. I highly recommend any of his books. And they're not business related, but you need to read it. It's The Power of Myth is sort of an interview that Bill Moyers did with Joseph Campbell. It's really about mythology and being a human being, really. So that's one. And one of my other favorites that's been a tremendous influence, and it's a very quick read, and your listeners are probably going to laugh. It's called The Little Prince. I don't know if you've heard of that. It's an old book. It's originally written in French, and it's about this little prince that comes from another planet and he lands in the desert. And very interesting, lots of really good life lessons, and that sort of sat with me just reading that book over and over, and that's been a tremendous influence on me.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. I'm sorry for getting you off track there, but you were saying that books were a big guide for you.
Yeah. I mean, and sort of like these esoteric books have always been a big guide, and they still continue to be. And, you know, everybody's reading the same current business book. We all, if you're in business, you should stay on top of current trends. But you need to get outside your box and outside of your world and read something that's maybe a little different and a little uncomfortable. And that's what these books have done for me. A lot of this, you know, things like The Little Prince. And that's actually one of the books that I share with when I'm mentoring, working with somebody on their business. I share that book because when you get down to it, business isn't, we're so taught and we're so programmed to think that business is about money, and I don't think it is, at least not, you know, my definition. It's really about building human connections. It's building connections with other people, people that you relate to, and helping them better themselves in whatever way that might be.
Absolutely. I mean, when you said you took over the bicycle shop, the main things you attributed your success to were going out, engaging with the community, and also, you know, reaching out to lawyers, accountants, other experts in other fields that could offer advice and expertise to help you out.
With the technical stuff, they really did help me a lot. But when we got down to this more esoteric side of business, they thought I was nuts.
Gotcha. Moving on, we kind of acknowledged that you had to overcome this debt associated with some of the products you were selling, and things really took off for you with the shop. Tell me about how you started to make the move into online business with the podcast, with the online course, other things you're doing now.
So what happened is, so I had this store, and we taught classes there. This is where it all sort of started. We taught these basic bicycle maintenance classes and different courses in the store. And for various reasons, I decided to sell that business. I sold it, did really well when I sold it. And now what I've done is, I guess about 8 years ago, I started a new business that is focused, was focused around a very specialized area of cycling, you know, racing and triathlon, and people that this is their main hobby, the thing that they do. So I'm only working with these people that I enjoy, that I connect with. You know, so I was teaching in-person maintenance classes. Every cyclist needs and in-person classes on technique and stuff. And one of my clients was there, and she said, she's like, you know, I'm not going to be able to make it to next week's class. Do you have like a video or something that I can, so I can watch the class, because I'm not going to make it. I have something else. It was like a light bulb went off. I just said, Oh, that's interesting. And so I immediately dove into learning about online courses and online learning. And I created these very simple, in-depth online courses. It was a tremendous mountain to create. Yet once it's created, now it's completely 100% automated. There's very little for me to do. People sign up and they go through these courses. And they're mostly video-based. And the production value is not professional quality. You know, as far as the videos and stuff, they're good, but they're not, I shot these all in my little studio with me and a helper, and we're not professional video people by any stretch. But the content is really, really good. That really has worked well. And it's an automated stream of income that I really have to do very little. And I have ways of, you know, feeding traffic into there to get clients. And that's
absolutely, I think there's a great lesson in there that content is ultimately king. Whether it's listening to a podcast, watching a video, it's obviously preferable to have it at the highest quality, best sound quality, best camera you can put it on. But if what's happening on the screen or what the actual content of what's coming into your earbuds is senseless garbage, it doesn't really matter. And I think that that's a really good lesson here there. In regards to once that course was complete, is that when the podcast started?
No, the podcast was already going actually when I started these. Yeah, maybe they were simultaneously. I can't remember. So and the the podcast we're talking about is this site. It's called Cycling 360. And we started out, there was three guys, and we get together and talk about the technical aspects of cycling. We were pretty technical, but regular guys. You know, we didn't have banter where we talk about the professional end of the sport. We're talking about, you know, real, regular people that ride bikes for fun and for fitness. And we talked about a lot of technical stuff. That's been just the most unbelievable journey of podcasting. It's enabled us to connect with people all over the world. Every day I'm getting emails from somebody in, God knows where, Singapore and South Africa, and say, hey, you know, your podcast has helped me so much. It's changed my life, you know, things like this. And it's just unbelievable. One thing that's interesting about the podcast, so we were this kind of technical, very technical oriented topics that we talked about. And one of our co-hosts, he left the show and went on to do other things. And so it was just two of us. And my co-host and I, we started talking, and you're like, you know, I'm getting kind of bored of just talking about technical stuff all the time. And we have a lot of other things that both of us want to share about how we live our lives and business and things. And so we started to mix it up and talk more about life-related things. Like, for instance, we did a show on meditation and how that relates to cycling and the rest of your life. And we've done shows on family and how family relates to your cycling and everything. When we made that change, that was really interesting. We got some hate mail. People said, oh, you guys are making a mistake. Don't do this. But then we had so many, the emails that we got were so passionate. You know, people were like, oh my gosh, I think about cycling in a different way. Now I'm thinking twice about disappearing for a full Saturday on a bike ride and leaving my family at home. You know, maybe there's a way I can do something with my family and still do my cycling. And so that's really been a lot more fun for us. Early on, we had one thing, and now we're kind of mixing it up and changing. And we're actually talking about business stuff now too, a little bit. So that's kind of interesting.
That's really cool. I think that also, I mean, at least what I'm taking away from that is, if you are being true to yourself, especially in the audio recording podcast format, if you're being true to yourself, that's really what's going to resonate with other people. It was feeling stale to you. I'm sure that there were listeners who it had maybe not started to feel stale with, but you know, you're talking about the same thing over and over, and they're thinking, you know, maybe I want to listen to a different topic or something outside the bicycling world, and being able to provide that for them instead of forcing them to go elsewhere to get that type of content just continues to endear you to your audience, I'd imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd like to say we're like super sophisticated in our strategy and stuff, but we're not. And we're just doing with what feels good to us and why are we doing it? We ask ourselves, you know, all the time, why are we doing it? Do we want to stop doing this? And then we get an email from someone that says, hey, you know, I just wanted to let you know that I started cycling 6 months ago and I've lost 10 pounds. I started a cycling club in my community and now I have like all these new friends and my relationship with my wife is better because I'm not disappearing for 6 hours on a Saturday. When you get an email like that, we know that we're in some way we're connecting at least with one person, and that's what matters. You know, we feel like we're in some way influencing someone or at least giving them another view for them to be able to think about their world in a different way. And that's what I feel. That's why podcasting is so amazing, that there's no other medium that I think that you could do that with, you know, that you get inside somebody's head the way you do with podcasting. Is just amazing.
I full-heartedly agree. What really brought me into podcasting, wanting to do this podcast, is getting that effect from other sources, other podcasts that I listen to, and wanting to just kind of share the love, because I'd talk to friends, I'd talk to family about this amazing podcast I listened to and how impactful and meaningful it was to me. And some people, you know, I'll share the link and they'll listen to it. But a lot of them just kind of nod along, okay, Aaron, you're crazy, chill out. Hoping that I can, for other shows that don't tickle fancy of some people out there. Maybe my show's got the right formula, the right blend of topics, length, substance, all that good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately the thing is, some people that listen to you are gonna connect, and some people are gonna listen to you and they're gonna say, "Oh my gosh, they're awful. These guys, they talk about cycling, they're horrible." And you know what? That used to bother me. And, you know, because we get occasional, you know, sort of hate mail. I call it hate mail. It's usually like, "Oh, you guys are boring," or something like that. But now I'm like, well, that's okay. That's fine. I don't connect with every single person on the planet. I connect with some people, and I'm not going to sit down and have a cup of coffee with somebody I don't connect with. I'm going to, hey, if you and I connect, hey, let's get together and have a cup of coffee and just hang out. And that's I think, I bring that through everything I do in any business, is connecting. Are we connecting? And it's okay if we're not. We don't have to be best friends. That's completely fine. But there is somebody else that you will connect with and that I'll connect with. And, you know, sort of on a deep level and our sort of our view of the world.
Absolutely. So you've kind of mentioned here that you've now moved into business consulting, so helping small businesses and giving advice to them. I think it's very clear that this is influenced by your experience not being able to find a mentor earlier on. Is that fair to say?
That's it. You nailed it 100%. I mean, that's it. It's like, what would I wish? I wish I would have had someone that would sort of advise me and, you know, guide me a little bit. You know, let me be creative and do my own thing, but give me a little bit of guidance, because I had no idea. If I would have had guidance, the right guidance early on in this retail business that I told you about, I think things would have been drastically different, and I wouldn't have had this as big a moment of despair where it was really desperate. I mean, I guess that's sort of the hero's journey. You know, you got to have the down part before you get the up part, but that's why I want to mentor, and why I don't like the word coaching, because to me coaching sort of is like rah 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 cheerleader, and I'm not a cheerleader. I help guide you and help you think of things in a different way, support you and keep you accountable, and it's really fun. It's really rewarding to me. I'm a bit of a business geek, and when I talk to someone has a business or is thinking of starting a business and they're really passionate about that thing, whatever it is, that's infectious. You know, we all want to hear, oh, you know, you're passionate about it. When you want to share it. And, you know, so often where it's sort of cliche now, it's, hey, follow your passion. But I think it's really true. And, you know, a lot of people will maybe knit pillows or something like that, and they're really passionate about that, but it may not be a business, but in itself. And maybe you can take that knitting pillows and somehow connect that passion to something else that you're good at that people will actually be interested in. And again, it's not always about money. I'm not I need money just like everybody else, but that's a secondary to all the work I do.
Absolutely. Do you have any business idols, past or present, that you've looked up to that you try to model the way you conduct your business after?
That's a good question. I'm sure I do. I don't have one off the top of my head. There is one guy that really impacted me, and I met him years ago. He's dead now, this guy, and his name is Peter Glenn. And I was at a conference, and he was giving a talk. And I think his talk really influenced me a lot. And what he talked about is, he was talking to a group of bicycle store owners, and he was telling us what we sold, you know. And he's like, forget it. You're not selling bikes. You're selling positive environmental impact. You're selling connections with others and things like that. And I think I highly recommend his stuff is hard to find. He does not have a book, although there's a book that somebody took all his articles and put them together in a book, but it's very difficult to locate. But I would say Peter Glenn, And probably my number one mentor that I see of all is Joseph Campbell's work. And it's not business stuff, but it really influences pretty much everything I do.
Great. Thank you. That's just about all the questions I have for you today. So to wrap things up, I'm going to hand the mic over to you one last time and allow you to issue a personal challenge to the audience. Really excited to hear what you have for us, Victor.
Oh, awesome. So this kind of relates to some of the stuff that we've talked about. And it's something that I've used more, I think more in recent years than in the past, at least consciously. And it's sort of building your business around your personal values. And so my challenge is for listeners, for you guys to revisit your personal values. And these aren't your business values. Actually, they should be the same thing. These are personal, deep-seated personal values. What I want you to do is get a piece of paper and write down five of your most important personal values. And a personal values, the only thing to remember, they can be anything, is it cannot be a material thing. You can't say, well, a Ferrari is my personal value, or money, having lots of money is my value. You know, it can't be something material. So I'll just list off, give you an idea here. Some of mine are family, learning, compassion, empathy, health, independence, simplicity. That's the kind of stuff. So it can be any word. Usually it's a one word thing. So once you've done this, what I want you to do is take that list and paste it up on your computer or something and check in with your daily activities. And you know, these are business, at work, in everything you do, and sort of use them like a, almost like a GPS. That's what they become, is, so is my day, am I being compassionate in this business dealing that I'm doing? Does it relate? What else, what other things does it connect to? And I'd like to hear what you discover after 5 days of doing this and revisiting these values and just using them. They're almost like a, it's really very much like a GPS, and they sort of guide you down the road. And you're using those, not someone else's values or what society or what education or any of that. These are just your personal things. So that's my tip or my challenge.
I really like that. I think I've been involved in some organizations where values are set, but something that would maybe cause a greater interaction between the members of an organization or just individuals and those values is seeing them on a regular basis. So mm-hmm. I really like the part about putting it somewhere that you'll see it daily and it'll interact with your daily schedule of activities. So thank you very much for that, Victor. If folks want to interact with you or maybe tell you about their five values that they wrote down, where can they connect with you?
Sure. You can reach me on Twitter, and it's Victor, J-I-M-E-N-E-Z. It's at Victor Jimenez on Twitter. You can also find me on LinkedIn, and you can go to my website, which is my business website is Victor Jimenez, J-I-M-E-N-E-Z.co, as in co. So you can reach me there. And I would love to have a conversation. I love connecting with people and learning about what you're doing and what you're interested in. So yeah, please reach out.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Victor. We just went deep with Victor Jimenez. Till next time, everybody. So much to Victor for coming on the show. If you want links to his Twitter account, any other information about Victor or his podcast, I encourage you to check out the show notes at goingdeepwithaaron.com under the podcast section. You can check out the show notes there.
I also just want to ask again that if you like today's episode or if you've liked previous episodes that I've put together, to please subscribe and also leave a rating and review on iTunes for the show. We are in a battle to get iTunes to recognize the show in their ranking algorithms, and those ratings and reviews go a huge way in helping me out there. So thank you so much to everyone out there who has already left a rating and review. And if you haven't done so yet, go do it. It takes 30 seconds. Come on. Either way, I will catch you next time. This has been Aaron Watson. Have a great day, everybody.